I'd like to give a special welcome to our visitors today, our guests that are with us. It's always nice to have advance notice. We're coming into town. I want to make sure that you're still meeting there. So glad to have you with us today, and hopefully you'll get a chance to visit with everyone after services today. I do want to make a correction on my weekly update. My wife pointed out to me that I said our teen camp is now at 8%. That is 80%, so far more than 8. So we're at 80% of our campers already for teen camp, so something exciting we're looking forward to, and we picked up two more this morning. So we're excited to see all those applications coming in. What's unique for this year for our teen camp is out of the number of campers that we have, I would say three-fourths of them are coming from out of state and have never been to Camp Sequoia before. So this is an exciting camp, but we have new staff coming in as well, so it'll be an exciting year. I want to cover a topic today that I realized as I was looking back at it, it was something that was on my mind, and I thought, well, you know, in my mind I was thinking it hasn't been that long since I covered it. And as I went back to look, well, when did I cover anything concerning this? And it was 7 years ago. So I thought, oh, wow, 7 years has gone by quickly. And so I wanted to make sure I cover this topic today. I'm going to finish our series that we're going through on church government next week, or 2 weeks from now, rather. But I want to cover today a particular topic. We see the news is full of things taking place around us in the world, and you can pretty much turn to any news channel. Sometimes it's hard to find news. You turn to your reliable news channels, and you'll start seeing all these different things that are taking place around the world. Even though the COVID pandemic is lessening in the U.S., there are areas around the world that are being hit very hard still by COVID. So June 15th, we're looking at what the governor has said is opening up for California, and that's even questionable whether that will happen or not. Some are saying now that he may pull back on that, but we're looking for things to open up. But we have to remember, that's not the way it is in other parts of the world. And even as was mentioned in this week's In Accord, that when we have our International Conference of Elders in August, we moved it to August instead of May to make sure that we can bring in those from international areas. And even for some of those, it's very iffy. So things are up in the air, of course, with the pandemic for the last year and a half. It has been difficult for many. We see the border with Mexico and the large number of children that are coming across the border. That has been an issue this year. I want to read from Border Report. This is Julian Resendez and Roxanne Ruiten from June 4th, so just 2 days ago. El Paso, Texas, Border Report. Gang-like activity, lice outbreaks, and emotionally distraught children lacking basic mental health care services. These are the conditions that employees are witnessing as migrant children enter in Fort Bliss. The Department of Health and Human Services opened up the emergency intake site in late March to temporarily house up to 5,000 unaccompanied migrant children, ages 13 to 17. Now, this is at just that one location, 5,000, crossing the border from Mexico into Texas. Not 2 months later, advocates and local congresswomen were expressing concerns to the news media of the poor health, hygiene, and the lack of oversight. And, of course, here we've seen cases where there are children that are less than 2 years old found wandering by themselves or with other children or other siblings just left to fend for themselves just to get through and cross the border. I want to read from an article. This is thebalance.com. Looking at our economy. The United States debt hit a new high of $28 trillion in March 2021. The debt to GDP ratio gives insights as to whether the U.S. has the ability to cover its debt. A combination of recessions, defense budget growth, tax cuts, has raised the national debt to ratios of record levels. And I don't think it's a surprise to any of us that I remember decades ago they were saying, oh, we are so far in debt, we have trillions of dollars in debt now that we owe, and now it's $28 trillion. We see the war going on with Israel and Hamas, and of course that has slowed for the time being. But this is an article that FP Insider, Israel's Iron Dome won't last forever. This is from June 3rd, so just from 2 days ago. Now the Iron Dome is what they call the defense system where all the missiles are coming in and they have their anti-missile attacks. So they call it the Iron Drone. It says, so Israel's Iron Dome, rather, won't last forever. In recent war between Israel and Hamas, the ceasefire was achieved after 11 days of fighting. Both sides claim victory. That's kind of hard to believe. Both are expecting another round in the future. Now that you can believe. It says, for Israel, the key to its success has been the Iron Dome air defense system, which uses radar and missiles to intercept rockets and other threats. This kept Israeli civilians relatively safe from the 4,340 rockets that Israel's defense forces say were fired from Gaza. 4,340 rockets or missiles sent in their direction. Israel's Defense Minister Benny Gantz is scheduled to meet with U.S. Defense Secretary to speak of up to $1 billion in emergency military aid to replenish the Iron Dome interceptors' use in the war. The recent conflict was different than previous wars in 2009, 2012, 2014, 2018, and 2019. There's been a few wars with Israel. What makes this round different is the unprecedented rocket fire that Hamas has unleashed on Israel, diminishing returns when they try to counter the Hamas. So part of that is thought to be believed because of the supplied military weapons given to Hamas or roundabout given to Hamas from the United States itself. This is all simply a sign of what this country, the United States, and what Israel is going through. The strength of the United States is weakening, and we see that. But the power and the strength of the Middle Eastern nations and of Europe itself is growing. So what is ahead for the United States? And will we see another recession? Will we see a Great Depression? Are we going to invest in one side or the other? Both are claiming victory. Both are receiving some type of support from the United States. But we know that there are some direct prophecies of what's going to take place to the United States and Britain. And I plan on speaking on the United States and Britain very soon, something I've been working on, and I think it's very appropriate to the time that we live in. And it is a balanced message about what we need to know and what we should know, because it's not typically a topic that we cover frequently and often. Let's talk about the United States and Britain and prophecy. But it is something that especially our younger people should know. So I want to cover that soon. We are also seeing what's destined to take place in the Middle East. We know that the prophecies of the end time are not just for the United States and Britain. We see the Middle East as a hotspot in the world right now, and we know that things are going to continue to get worse. And there are clear indications of how things will play out in the end of this age. Hamas has been escalating the attacks against Israel, and we see that over 4,000 rockets or 4,300 rockets being sent. Hamas in the past has developed elaborate tunnel systems where they tried to infiltrate Israel through tunnels. And of course, Israel has been effective in destroying most of those and removing their entrance or their ability to get in to Israel. Animosity continues to grow between Israel and United States, or the Middle East and the United States, even between Israel because of the lack of support, but towards Israel and the United States because they look at Israel and the support that we have had in the past as something that they are very much against. And why is the world against Israel? And why is the world becoming against the United States? Well, it does have to go back to Abraham. And you think, well, why is what's happening today, how does that have any connection whatsoever to Abraham? How can that be traced? And you may be thinking, well, there's no way to really point out that what we're experiencing today and what's going to happen has to do with Abraham. I want to refer to an article, this was written years ago by Tim Groves. Israel's primary enemy has historically and presently been among the Arab and Islamic peoples. This problem has its roots in ancient times when Abraham fathered his first son Ishmael by his wife's handmaiden Hagar. And again, we could think, well, that's Abraham. That's an Old Testament story. But we see that it has very much implication to what we're going through. Even though he was Abraham's firstborn, Ishmael did not receive the birthright blessings. Since God intended that blessing to go to his half-brother Isaac, who was the heir born to Abraham and his wife Sarah. Ever since, there has been a hatred between Ishmael and Isaac's descendants. And you think, well, how could thousands of years you have this battle going on between family? If you have family, and I know with mine, there's always at least one in my family who is not communicating with the rest of the family. There's arguments, there's disputes and things where there's always one that's just not talking to the family. And some family disputes, we think of the Hatfields and McCoys, famous disputes where the families just would not cooperate with one another. And you think, well, how long did it really go back to Ishmael and Isaac? I'm going to think about this because it's thousands of years and they're still feuding. It's a family feud. The article goes on, adding to this animosity was the hatred between Abraham's twin children, Esau and Jacob. Esau sold his birthright to Jacob for a bowl of soup and wanted to kill him. And many of Esau's descendants also now live in the Middle East. And their ancient hatred of Jacob's descendants continues today. An ancient hatred of Jacob's descendants. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 35. Ezekiel 35, and we're going to start in verse 1. Ezekiel 35 and verse 1. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Mount Seir, and prophesy against it, and say, Thus says the Lord God, Behold, O Mount Seir, I am against you, and I will stretch out my hand against you, and will make you desolate. I will lay your cities waste, and you shall be desolate. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. Verse 5 says, Because you have had an ancient hatred and have shed the blood of the children of Israel. Even here in Ezekiel, we see that he says Mount Seir has had an ancient hatred towards the children of Israel. It says, By the power of the sword and at the time of their calamity, when their calamity came to an end. Clark commentary states about this perpetual hatred or an ancient hatred. The Edomites, which were descendants of Esau, the Israelites, and the descendants of Jacob, both of these were brothers, and between them there was contention even in the womb. We've never had twins, but I've heard that twins can sometimes even, you think of your kids squabbling, think of them squabbling in the womb. There was contention in the womb, and they lived generally in a state of enmity. Their descendants have kept up the ancient feud. But the Edomites were implacable. They had not only rooted perpetual enmity towards the Israelites, harassing and distressing them by all possible means, and they seized the opportunity. And when the Israelites were most harassed by other enemies, to make inroads upon them and cut them off wherever they found them. Amos chapter 1 tells us that, I'm not going to turn there, but Amos 1:1 is a reference. Thus says the Lord, For three transgressions of Edom, and for four I will not turn away its punishment, because he pursued his brother with a sword and cast off all pity, and his anger tore perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. So today we see the Middle Eastern nations so angry with Israel and so angry with the United States. And you can think, well, they're angry because the United States looks as, and they have this impression because of media and because of movies and other things, that the United States is this prosperous nation, and it's because they stole the birthright blessings thousands of years ago. And they still hold that wrath and they hold that grudge. Let's go to Obadiah. There's a book we turn to all the time. Obadiah chapter 1. And we read in verse 10. Obadiah 1 and verse 10. He says, "For violence against his brother Jacob, shame cover you all, and you shall be cut off forever. In the day that you stood on the other side, and in the day that strangers carried captive his forces, when foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, and you were as one of them. But you should not have gazed on that day of your brother, in the day of his captivity, nor should you have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Nor should you have spoken proudly in the day of distress. You should not have entered the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Indeed, you should not have gazed upon their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor laid hands on the substance in the day of their calamity. You should not have stood at the crossroads to cut off those from them who escaped, and nor should you have delivered up those from among them who remained in the day of distress." They would like to completely eliminate Israel. And we see that sentiment even today. "For the day of the Lord upon these nations is near. As you have done, it shall be done to you, and your reprisal shall be returned upon your own head. For as you drank on my holy mountain, so shall all the nations drink continually. Yes, they shall drink and swallow, and they shall be as though they had never been. But Mount Zion, there shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness. The house of Jacob shall possess their possessions." He said, the house of Jacob is going to continue, and it's going to be given back to Jacob. Ezekiel told us, "Set your face against Mount Seir and prophesy against it." And you think, well, what does Mount Seir have to do with this? According to Becker Bible Studies, Mount Seir is a mountain range in Edom, and extending from the Dead Sea to the Elantanic Gulf, also known as the Gulf of Aqaba, and more eastern, two arms of the Red Sea. Petra, or Jordan, is located next to this mountain, or next to this mountain range. Mount Seir and the other nations of the people often refer to Petra as Mount Seir, because they look in that direction, they say Mount Seir, and it includes what's called Petra. Mount Seir is the mountain range that is chosen for the descendants from Esau and the Edomites. And it says Esau is Edom and has made his home in Mount Seir. So we see Edom. Well, we know who Edom is. This is supported when we go back to Genesis chapter 36. And there's just a few things I'm trying to lay as a groundwork for understanding what's taking place today and why that feud is still there. Genesis chapter 36 and in verse 6. Genesis chapter 36 and verse 6. Said Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, and all the persons of his household, the cattle and the animals, and all his goods which he had gained in the land of Canaan, and they went to a country away from the presence of his brother Jacob. For the possessions were too great for them to dwell together, and the land where they were strangers could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. So who's Edom? Well, it's Esau. And Esau and Jacob in the struggle, and Esau and the children of Israel has continued. Former President Trump seemed to support Israel and seemed to have a very good working relationship with Israel. And again, we gave Israel some kind of backing, but we see that that has changed to a degree, and I think we're going to see that change even more. We see that the U.S. was involved in a roundabout way with supplying the rockets to Israel. They say that we were supplying other countries who were giving the weapons to Hamas that were being used against Israel. And at the same time, we're supporting Israel, saying, no, we support both. It's a roundabout thing, and of course, this is new, so how much of it is validated is difficult to find out. But we also see that there are lessening loyalties from the U.S. To Israel, and I think we're going to see that continue. Will the U.S. continue to distance itself from Israel? Will they pull back? And because so many nations hate the nation of Israel and the Israeli people that I think the United States may continually just back off from that. I want to read what's prophesied to happen to Israel. Let's go to Zechariah chapter 12. Zechariah chapter 12. And verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord against Israel. Thus says the Lord, who stretches out the heavens and lays the foundations of the earth and forms his spirit of man within him. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who will heave it away will surely be cut into pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it. All nations of the earth, it says, are gathered against Jerusalem. What will lead to Israel's demise, just as we read here in Zechariah? When is it that all nations are going to come against or be gathered against Israel? Well, we just read this in Zechariah, but let's go to Daniel. Daniel gives us prophecies of the end time and of some of the things that are going to take place and have been already taking place under our noses for quite a few years. It says in verse 1, also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. And now I will tell you the truth, because three more kings will arise in Persia. And the fourth will be far richer than them all, and by his strength and through the riches shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. Then a mighty king shall rise, who shall rule with great dominion and according to his will. Verse 4, and when he is risen, the kingdom shall be broken up and divided towards four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, not according to the dominion which he had ruled. His kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides these. These events have been fulfilled, and we see that following the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC. We see the nations gathering together and falling apart, as this describes here. But then in verse 5, it describes a different time. Verse 5, it says, and also the king of the south shall become strong, as well as one of his princes, and he shall gain power over him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. This is something that is yet to happen, or actually is in the process of happening. The powers of the king of the south becoming stronger. Daniel 11 here tells us about the king of the south, and again, it's very little mention of the king of the south. So who is this king of the south? Verse 40 in Daniel tells us that these things are going to exist at the time of the end. He was giving a prophecy to Daniel. This is going to be at the end of the age. And the king of the south and the king of the north are entities that are going to be forces against one another at the end of the age. I'm going to make several references to two other articles. Both of these are written by David Treybig, and they're in Life, Hope, and Truth, concerning Israel, concerning the end of the age, concerning the king of the north and king of the south. The purpose of the prophecy for Daniel was for Daniel and is for us today, of what will happen to the Jewish people, Daniel's people, after the prophet's death. Now we could say, well, what's going to happen to the Jewish people. It's not what's happening to us. And sometimes we can become so callous and think, well, that's Judah, that's somebody else, that's another nation. Or all of these things are happening so far away, it doesn't impact me. But he's saying this is a prophecy that is for us today. And he says, given that the prophecy is written for the Jewish perspective, directions south or north are given in relation to Jerusalem. When we see king of the north and king of the south, well, you could say, well, the north and the south, that was here in the United States. We have a war and there's north and the south. Where do we get understanding of where the north and the south is? Well, it's in relation to Jerusalem, the ancient capital of the kings of Judah. And so the king of the south was located to the south of Jerusalem. And so we know that in Bible prophecy, the king of the south is going to come from somewhere south of Jerusalem. One of the four divisions of Alexander's empire was located in Egypt, which was south of Jerusalem. The leader of this kingdom was is the king of the south, spoken of in verse 5. In history, the rulers of this kingdom based in Egypt were called the Ptolemies. So even in history, they considered the king of the south as being the Egyptian nations or Arab nations. It's important to note the next statement that he makes to understand where we are today. He says in verse 32 and 39, he describes the actions of the Jewish family called the Maccabees to resist the king of the north. Now the king of the north, he says, which became the Roman Empire. We can track that. We see that through history. Following Rome's victory over Seleucid Syria in 65 BC, and incidentally, we should also note that the Roman defeat of Egypt in 30 BC, this empire was a major political power controlling lands both to the north and south of Jerusalem. So here in Daniel, verse 32, says, those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. Those of the people who understand shall instruct many. Yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame and captivity and plundering. And when they fall, they shall be aided with little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those of understanding shall fall and refine them and purify them and make them white until the time of the end. Again, we're reading about Daniel's time of the end. Because it is still for the appointed time. Then the king shall do according to his will, and shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, speak blasphemies against God, the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, and what is being determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the god of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor any god, and he shall exalt himself above them all. But in their place he shall honor the god of fortresses, and the God of his fathers did not know or honor with silver and gold and precious stones and precious things. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortress with a foreign God, not with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but a foreign God, which he shall acknowledge and advance his glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. The article goes on to give us a key. And it says, the prophecy of Daniel 11 then pauses after these nations, and it talks about these four various nations that would rule and have power and would fight as the king in the north, king of the south. And we see those coming to an end and ending as the Roman Empire became stronger and stronger. But then it says there was a pause for some nearly 2,000 years between the time of the Maccabees and the appearance of one again, of the king of the south at the time of the end. So there's a pause in history where we don't see the king of the south and the king of the north fighting over and with involving the Israel and other nations. During this pause in prophecy, a Jewish nation no longer existed. So for 2,000 years, the Jewish nation didn't exist. And it's hard to have wars and animosity and battles, although it still took place, even without a nation, 2,000 years without Israel being a nation. So we read in verse 40, at the time of the end, this puts us in the time which we believe we are living in, the king of the south shall push at him or attack the king of the north. So the king of the north, if it is Rome and the Roman Empire, you have the king of the south, which is Egypt or the Arab nations. The Arab nations push at the king of the north and come against him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen, many ships, and he shall enter into the countries, overwhelm them, and conquer them and pass through. That attack wasn't so well planned out. God says that the king of the north will turn around and conquer them very quickly. He shall also enter into the glorious land. So now the king of the north, because of the power and because of the movement that is taking place, is going to move into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. Now it's interesting when we read these particular names. Verse 42, he shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So we know that Egypt is involved in some way, as was mentioned even in the article. He shall have power over the treasures of the gold and silver and over the precious things of Egypt, and also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. So are we about to see these things take place? Are we going to see the king of the north and the king of the south coming up very quickly? Where do we stand in prophecy? So it says in this another article by David Trabig, future king of the south, with the establishment of a Jewish nation called the State of Israel. Now, you're hearing this because we have been hearing it on the news when Israel became a state again and that they are considered a nation. With the establishment of a Jewish nation called the State of Israel in the Middle East in 1948, interactions between a king of the south and king of the north have once again become relevant for the Jewish people. This was a prophecy of something that was to happen, and they're like, but how can you have king of the north, king of the south, when you don't have Israel or Jerusalem to be one that they're fighting against and one that they're fighting with? I suggest reading some of these articles, and they're interesting articles, especially timely with what's taking place in the Middle East at this time. But here's how History.com speaks of this particular day of March 14th, 1948, when Israel became the state of Israel, became a nation. It says, on May 14th, 1948, in Tel Aviv, Jewish agency chairman David Ben Gurion proclaims the state of Israel, establishing the first Jewish state in 2,000 years. Ben-Gurion became Israel's first premier. In the distance, on that very particular day, in the distance, rumbles of guns could be heard from fighting that broke out between the Jews and the Arabs immediately following the British army withdrawal earlier that day, and Egypt launched an air assault against Israel that evening. To think about here, 2,000 years without being considered a nation, great, we become a nation, and people start firing missiles at you, and war begins to break out between Jews and the Arabs, and Israel, Egypt at the time was the one launching attacks against Israel, air attacks. So during nearly 2,000 years without the state of Israel, man recognized, and during this period, Muhammad, who became and founded Islam. David Trabig points out, he said, while most Muslims are peaceful and peace-seeking, a radical element exists with the goal of dominating the earth. Now you can say, well, that's kind of extreme, but that's what they say even today. They have the goal of conquering the entire earth. They think it was rightfully theirs and think it was taken from them. And again, that's why there's an animosity. It says, especially in the Middle East, and a forcible installing of Islam as the universal religion, radical Muslims embrace terrorism as a means to their desired end. And so they say, however we can do it, we are going to do it. And they have a goal of dominating the earth. And that's exactly what we've heard in the news. That is their goal. So how will the nations join together and come against Israel or come against Jerusalem? Let's go to the book of Psalms. I want to read a particular psalm, Psalm 83, and beginning in verse 1. Psalm 83 and verse 1. A song, a psalm of Asaph. Do not keep silent, O God. Do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O God. For behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. That's something we hear today as well. Let's cut them off from being a nation. They don't deserve to be a nation. They shouldn't be a nation. And this was, again, a psalm that was written. Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, and let that name of Israel be remembered no more. There is a complete hatred towards Israel. For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you. A confederacy means a covenant or league to destroy. Other nations have joined together in saying, we have to destroy Israel. Verse 6, it says, the tents of Edom and Ishmaelites and Moab and the Hagats, the Gamal, Ammon, Amalek, Philistia, and the inhabitants of Tyre, Assyria also has joined with them, and they have helped with the children of Lot. So bottom line is, it seems likely that a leader from Egypt is going to become powerful through the Arab nations, and as a king of the south, will begin to push against Israel and also then attack or move towards the king of the north. But it's part of this group of nations representing a power, and it's likely that Egypt, or if Egypt is not leading it, they will be very much so involved in it. Who then is the king of the north? We know while the king of the north is Rome or the Roman nations, is there more to the king of the north that we should know? Let's look at Daniel chapter 11 again and verse 5. Daniel chapter 11 and verse 5. Says, also the king of the south shall become strong, and that's what we were just looking at, as well as one of his princes, and he shall gain strength or gain power over him and have dominion, and his dominion shall be a great dominion. So the king of the south is going to have it's not just going to be this weak nation that pushes against the king of the north, it is going to have a great dominion and power. And we see the block of Arab nations joining together do have power, and they have money. At the end of some years, they shall join forces, and the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north and make an arrangement, but he shall not retain the power of her authority. And neither he nor his authority shall stand, but she shall be given up, and those who brought her and with him begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. Life Open Truth says, in 65 B.C., the Roman Empire defeated Seleucid Syria in 30 B.C. and also defeated Egypt. So both the king of the north and the king of the south now came under Roman rule. When there is no Israel and the defeat was there, it was all Roman rule. They didn't have a king of the north and king of the south. It was one kingdom. It's also interesting to note that the detailed early part of the prophecy seems to end at the first century and not resume until the time of the end referred to by Daniel. We saw that 2,000-year period because Israel wasn't a nation. And we could say, well, they became a nation in 1948. How come things didn't happen sooner? We already saw it happened that evening. They began to fire, and that hatred was aroused again, and they began to fight them very quickly. Going into verse 40. It says, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, and with horsemen and chariots and ships and other countries will overwhelm them and pass through. He shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries will be overthrown. And then it talks about those who escape. And I mentioned Edom, Moab, and the prominent peoples of Ammon. So why is it that these nations escape? Well, Genesis 36 gives us a genealogy of Esau. It says, who is Edom? It explains who that is. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 19. We find a little bit more in Genesis chapter 19, verse 30. Genesis 19, verse 30. It says, then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on earth to come into us, as is the custom of the earth. And come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him and make him preserve the lineage of our father. So they made the father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know that when she had laid down and when she rose up. And it happened on the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, indeed, my father Indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight, and you go in and lie with him, and that we may preserve the lineage of our father. And when they made him drink wine that night, the younger arose and laid with him, and he did not know when she came in and when she left. And thus both daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn bore a son, called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ami, and is the father of the people of Ammon, or Ammon, to this day. So we, at some point, will understand fully why God says that these particular nations or groups of people will be spared in these areas. We do know that there is going to be coming the resurrection of the Roman Empire. Just as there is a north and a south now from Jerusalem, we know that the king of the north is going to push against, or the king of the south is going to push against the king of the north. We know these things are going to take place. And knowing the history and why the hatred is there, you can see why, if they have to become terrorists, if they have to give their lives, they have the goal of dominating the world, the Arab nations do. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. It's almost amazing to think sometimes that feeling cheated can last in not only an individual, but be passed down from generation to generation to generation of we were cheated out of our rightful inheritance. We should be given this. Yeah, even when God himself said this is going to be the heir to receive these things. And he said the Arab nations were going to be powerful. They're going to receive and become powerful nations. But it wasn't enough. They wanted to have this blessing from God. Daniel chapter 2 and verse 40. It says, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, talking about the Nebuchadnezzar's vision. Insomuch as iron breaks into pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, the kingdom will break in pieces and crush the others. And wherever you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, then the kingdom will be divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, as you saw iron mixed with clay, with the ceramic clay. And as those toes, the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. And you saw iron mixed with clay and ceramic clay. They will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And we heard Mr. O'Malley talking about this recently, with how these nations won't mix together at the end. They're going to come together, but they don't form a very congealed unit. But what this joining together is not going to last. In verse 44, it says, in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall not be destroyed, the kingdom that shall not be left to other people, and it shall break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms and will stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands, and it broke into pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, all of those empires. And the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this, and the dream is certain and its interpretation is sure. This forming of nations at the end and the giving up of power we see is going to take place. And God says it is going to take place. It is sure, but it is not going to last. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 3. Says, the four beasts come up out of the sea. We see a similar description of the powers and these beasts. It says, the four great beasts come up out of the sea, and each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings, and watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and said thus, arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. And the beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. You know, when you have to think about Daniel, seeing these things going, I have never had these weird, vivid dreams of these animals and wings and all these heads. But again, he says, it's not given to you to understand these things. It's going to be revealed at the end of the age. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, the fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and exceedingly strong, and it had huge iron teeth and devoured in the breaking of pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from the beast that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So we see 10 horns or 10 powers. These 10 horns represent the 10 powers or kingdoms that at the end will give their power to the beast. Now we go to Revelation to see further description of these 10 horns. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 12. Revelation 17 and verse 12. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. Now, again, I've mentioned before, and some say, well, there's more nations as a part of the European Union than 10. We have to wait for it to dwindle down to 10, so we've got plenty of time. No, it only says 10 nations give their power and give their complete power to the beast. It doesn't say that there's only 10 nations as a part of the European Union. So the beast will receive their authority. It says these will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords, King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. So he says it's not going to last. This is the stone that comes down and crushes the 10 nations and every other empire that went before it. So as we get closer, it appears that Egypt will become king of the south and will align with the kingdoms of the south, or the Arab nations, and the king of the north being the Roman Empire. And that Roman Empire will then overcome and be the power, basically the power of the world at that time. What will cause the king of the south to attack the king of the north? Now, it doesn't tell us why they attack. It just says the king of the south pushes against the king of the north. Is it going to be over oil? Will it be over religion or religious persecution? Will it be over Israel and Jerusalem and the battle that's going on now with the Arab nations? And you think of religion having a presence. Is it because there's religion and governmental presence in the Middle East? The Pope has already made a statement in the past and multiple times, has said there needs to be a religious power that solves disputes of the Middle East. Oh, so the Roman Empire wants to have power to dissolve all this, or to solve all the disputes in the Middle East. He wasn't saying himself, but obviously you have the Pope saying there should be a religious power that does this, and, well, I happen to be a religious power. No, he's promoting the church, his church, as being that religious power. Now, we read in Zechariah how Jerusalem is going to become a focal point of all the disputes at the end of the age. And with even what's taking place there religiously, to have the Pope come in, are they going to push against the King of the North and say, no, you're not going to take over religiously what's going on in these areas? And we look at the three major religions that are around Jerusalem, and we see that they are these children who are disputing over whose territory it is. But we read in Zechariah how Jerusalem's going to become that focal point, and Zechariah said, for I will gather all nations to battle against Jerusalem. Jerusalem is going to become the hotspot. It's a hotspot right now, and we see things backing off, but I don't think it's going to last very long. Things are so heated at this point in Israel and in Jerusalem that I think that's going to continue to increase until the end of the age. So how does this apply to you and I? Is it just simply interesting reading and, wow, it's nice. We know now who the king of the north and the king of the south are. Or is it just that we think, well, that's all in another place. That doesn't have to do with us here. Let's go to Luke chapter 21. Luke chapter 21 and verse 9. Luke 21 and verse 9. Now, this is going to sound familiar because we generally read it from Matthew's account, and we will. But Luke 21 and verse 9, it says, "When you hear of wars and commotions, do not be terrified, for these things must come to pass." We know wars are going to come to pass. We know that the battles are going to be there. But the end will not come immediately. So we can't think, well, oh, battle ended, it's over, and things are going to have to start up again. No, he said, this is going to come to pass, and it's part of the end of the age, but it will not end, the end will not come immediately. He said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes in various places, famines and pestilence, and there will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven. But before all of these things, they will lay hands on you and persecute you and deliver you up to the synagogues and to prisons, and you will be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. But it will turn out for you as an occasion for testimony. Therefore, settle it in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you're going to answer." It says, settle it in your hearts. Already have it in mind. You're not going to have the perfect answer, and so you're going to go, okay, I've been reading this. If I ever get asked these questions, here's my answer. He said, no, settle in your hearts not to meditate beforehand going, how am I going to answer that? Because we have no idea, or individuals have no idea. He says, "I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist." We don't want to come up with our own answer. God says, I'm going to give you the answer, and I will amaze individuals, just as he says he will amaze individuals through the meek and the humble and those that he calls. "You will be betrayed, even by parents and brothers, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death." Interesting to think that even family and relatives will turn against us, turn against God's people. "You shall be hated for my name's sake, but not a hair of your head will be lost. But your patience, or by your patience, possess your souls." Other translations say, "In your patience you possess your souls." He said you have to be patient. You have to be ready to wait, in a way. Sitting there, watching, being prepared, and understanding what's going on. But patient, not going, nope, it's not happening quick enough. I need to do something to make it happen. Or not going, it's way off. I don't need to worry about it. He said, in your patience, possess your souls. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, he said, all of these things are going to take place in the wars, the battles, nation fighting against nation. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Okay, so Jerusalem will be at some point surrounded by armies. "Let those who are in Judea flee then to the mountains, and those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter in." When we see the preparation for the destruction of Israel, we know that the time is very near. So he says, when you see this surrounded by armies, you know that the desolation of Jerusalem is near. Let's look at Matthew's account, Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 13. "But he who endures to the end shall be saved." Now, very similarly what Luke was saying, in your patience possess your souls. You're going to endure, you're going to be patient, you're going to wait it out, and you will be there. "He who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached into all nations as a witness to into all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place," whoever reads, let him understand. "And then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains." So in Luke's account, he talks about Jerusalem being surrounded by armies and becoming desolate. We know at the same time, Matthew's account says the abomination of desolation that's set up. Sacrifices and what is taking place with those and how those will be removed. But also, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies or you see this abomination of desolation, they're both talking about the same event. Barnes notes states of the mountains, said, "Let them who be in the mountains of Palestine area in caves, a safe retreat for all of those who are pursued." Now, we've read a couple times already of Petra and Ammon and Jordan, and these being places that individuals were. And even some that God says would be spared, that they were living in a cave. These caves, it's interesting, it says a safe retreat for those who are pursued. In all ages, these caves have been a favorite hiding place for robbers, and also were where individuals resorted when they were in danger. So the mountains that are around, he said, if you're in Judea at that time, or if you're near Jerusalem, you flee into these mountains for protection. Now, I'm not saying that Petra is the place of safety. It could be. But I'm just saying in a direction that we're looking at, those who are in that area at the time, the desolation of abomination of desolation is set up and taking place, or when you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, those who are in that area, God tells you, you better flee to the mountains. You better flee to these caves and seek refuge. Again, they're going to have to flee quickly. Verse 17, let him who's on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. He said, when that time comes, this surrounding and the abomination of desolation, and when Jerusalem is about to become desolate, he said, you don't have much time at all. If you're on the housetop, don't come down to take anything out of the house. You just go. Let him who's in the field not come turn back to take his clothes. And woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing in those days. It says, pray that your flight be not in the winter nor on the Sabbath day. Do we do that? When was the last time in your prayers that you prayed that when the time comes for fleeing, or when it comes time to, for God's people, at least in this area, to flee? He says, pray that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. Have we quit praying for that? Do we continue to pray for that? It says, for then will be great tribulation, such as not since the beginning of this world, nor to this time, nor ever will be. And unless those days are shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So we see Jerusalem is the hot spot of the world. If you don't realize that, you're not watching any news, because it's on there. That is what has been portrayed very, very much so lately. The Middle East is a boiling point and ready to explode from all of these different Arab nations, and the hatred that is continuing to grow towards the United States, towards Britain, towards Israel. Are we watching that, and are we aware of that? Again, news can be sometimes very one-sided, and we can think, well, there's not enough information. It's hard for me to find information. That's why it's important for us as members of the body of Christ to be discussing things with one another, talking about these things that are happening in the world, trying to find as much information as we can, but iron sharpening iron, letting each other know, here's some things that I found out. This is some of the things I found taking place. These to be things that we're discussing. It says the king of the north and the king of the south, and we know that these are only a part of what's going to take place. It's only a part of prophecy, but they are key to knowing when that desolation and when these things are coming to a close. I want to end in Zechariah, turning back back to Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14. And verse 3. Zechariah 14 and verse 3. It says, then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem to the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from the east to the west, making a very large valley. Half the mountain shall move towards the north, and half of it towards the south. Again, we know that this is nothing less than the return of Jesus Christ. And he's going to plant his feet at the Mount of Olives. And it's pictured by the Feast of Trumpets, which, by the way, is a little over 13 weeks away. Coming up very quickly. These are events that are portrayed where we have looked at these and heard about these for decades. But now we're watching some of these things just playing right under our nose, and I think it would be callous of us and unwise to think that, well, these things aren't going to happen anytime soon. We need to be watching. We need to be praying. We need to be focused on the end time events, because the world is a boiling point. And Jerusalem itself and Israel is a boiling point for what is taking place. And they are the main focus of the end time events and where things are going to come together. And they will come together, as we're told, very, very quickly.